Hello, my name is Carl Roberts. I am Professor of Policing and Criminal Justice at the University of Western Sydney in Sydney, Australia. I'm also a consultant for the World Health Organization on health security and policing, with a particular interest in how police deal with pandemic disease. The title of this podcast is Policing the Pandemic, and it aims to explore some of the current and perhaps some of the future challenges that are going to be experienced by police in their attempts to deal with COVID-19. Now, within this podcast, what I want to do is explore some particular issues, which I'll just outline at the outset. Firstly, what I want to look at is some of the historical context which has led up to the particular situation we now face, in particular looking at some of the prior planning for a pandemic that various nations have engaged in, and how that's affected what the police are able to do and how it's presented challenges for the police. I then want to move in to look at how the world has legislated particularly for COVID-19, and again, how that legislation, the clarity of it, and some of the particular measures that have been made have presented challenges for the police. I'm going to look a little bit at changes in crime patterns and, again, how that affects what the police are required to do, and also some of the interaction between the police and the criminal justice system, as COVID-19 has had an impact also upon the criminal justice system and therefore, by default, almost on policing. An important aspect of COVID-19 is the experience of police officers themselves and how the pandemic itself affects police officers. And so we'll explore a little bit officer well-being as one of the central challenges here. Beyond this, what I also want to look a little bit about is this idea of how the transition periods have been policed, how as nations move out from often lockdowns as their response to the pandemic, what implications that has for police and how they police this transitory period. And finally, what I want to then explore is how policing may respond to what we might call the new normal, what happens after the pandemic in the years to come, and how perhaps society changes and what implication that has for police. So firstly, let's have a look at the background. What was the world like before COVID-19? What kind of plans were in place from nations around the world to deal with the threat of a pandemic? And what role was envisaged for the police within any of these plans? Now, most nations have put together over the years pandemic plans. That is the methods by which a nation will deal with a pandemic disease. Now, typically, the biggest threat that was felt to be faced by most nations was the threat of pandemic influenza. So quite naturally, most of these pandemic plans, in fact, all of these pandemic plans, actually look at how a nation will deal with a pandemic of influenza. Now, throughout the world, all of these plans are very much driven and built around public health and medical considerations. Quite properly, pandemic diseases represent a significant public health challenge to any nation. However, within all of the plans, very, very few of them internationally mention the police at all. And in fact, those that do, the very, very few that do, generally say that the role of the police will be to carry out duties as usual, plus other duties. What these duties are remain unspecified. Now, quite clearly, within planning of this sort, where police aren't mentioned, it becomes unclear what it is that's expected of them. Suggesting that police should carry on duties as normal plus other duties is a very, very broad church and implies a range of different possible activities. Certainly in the plans, we see absolutely no consideration of what specifically it is the police should do, how they should do it, or indeed what resources they might require to do the work that's required of them. And of course, within all of these plans, there's a general sense that the police are seen as very much a tool of public health, that police really will do the bidding of public health, of government. But again, as I say, without really specifying exactly what that is and what the limits are of their particular involvement. Certainly, none of the plans really see police as a facilitator of public health messaging. Now, this, of course, has led on to other challenges, particularly when we now look at the COVID-19 situation. Because when governments enacted their legislation to deal with and respond to COVID-19, again, these were all very much informed by both pre-existing pandemic plans and also, again, very properly by public health and medical considerations. We know that there is no treatment or cure for COVID-19, so the best advice from a public health perspective is social distancing to prevent infection, to reduce the opportunity of the virus to move from one person to the next. And so what virtually every government in the world has enacted is a system of lockdowns in order to prevent transmission of the virus. And of course, these lockdowns throughout the world have been of varying levels of strictness, ranging from broad-based advisories to stay at home and avoid contact with others, right the way through to essentially quarantine, where individuals are prevented from leaving the house in all but the most exceptional circumstances. Again, though, if we look back at the pandemic plans and the lack of mention of police within them, what we find within most of the legislation that has been enacted throughout the world is, again, a limited, if any, mention of the police within that legislation. Although the police are expected to enforce it to ensure that the legislation is successful. Indeed, much of the legislation worldwide can be classified as being somewhat vague and often open to wide interpretation. For example, in the United Kingdom, people were told that they could exercise for up to 1 hour a day, but it was never specified whether you could actually travel to that exercise. Some members of government suggested that no, the exercise needed to be conducted around an individual's home, whereas other individuals were much more tolerant of people travelling to the location of their exercise. Of course, for the police, this presented a real challenge, and enforcement measures then essentially fall on the discretion of any given officer. Some officers may well take a much more draconian attitude than others. And we saw examples of this in the United Kingdom of some officers issuing fines very readily, whilst in some areas, whilst in other areas, officers would just explain the situation and ask individuals to move on. More broadly, there were broader challenges in enforcement in terms of some police forces using things like drones and other means of surveillance to ensure compliance with the rules, whilst other police forces took perhaps a more relaxed approach and were much less concerned about surveying the public. Internationally, we've also seen a range of different practices from police, ranging from, in some jurisdictions, extremely strict and perhaps what you might describe as overzealous policing approaches, many of which have involved threats of violence and in some cases deadly violence in order to achieve compliance. In certainly one nation that I'm aware of, more people had died in the early days of the COVID-19 outbreak as a result of police enforcement action than had actually died of COVID-19 itself. In other jurisdictions, of course, we've seen a much more softly approach, which has involved engagement and persuasion of the public in order to achieve voluntary compliance with the rules rather than utilising force to assure compliance. Now, of course, a major challenge for police moving forward is that the method of enforcement that's used has a significant impact upon the attitude of the public toward police and also ultimately on the likelihood of compliance with the orders and with the legislation as presented. So, for example, where police have used overzealous methods that are perceived to be unfair by the public, this has often had a very negative impact upon both the public attitude toward the police, upon the sense of the legitimacy of the police to enforce the regulations, and ultimately has inhibited public cooperation with the police. In contrast, engagement and persuasion approaches have generally been seen worldwide to actually enhance cooperation through the maintenance of trust for the police. So to summarise all of that then, what seems to be the case is in the past we have had a situation where police have not really been included in any pandemic planning. This has then led to a lack of clarity upon what the police role should be in public health emergencies, and ultimately legislation that's been enacted to deal with the COVID-19 situation that has been variously unclear, uncertain, often rapidly enacted, and which has left the police perhaps unsure of what their actual specific role is, and also and how best to police the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, COVID-19 itself has also produced a number of changes in the normal patterns of crime. Certainly, recent data has demonstrated a widespread international reduction in overall crime. It seems that figures are down, ranging from 50 to 60, sometimes 70%, in terms of recorded crime over what was seen at the same time last year. However, despite these falls in recorded crime, what we have seen is a fairly consistent pattern internationally of changes to the patterns in crime. What we've seen, for example, is a fairly consistent increase in the levels of domestic violence as a result of people being locked down in their homes for long periods of time. There has been some indication of abuse of the elderly starting to increase. Certainly, we've seen a rise in internet-enabled crimes, fraud, especially things like fake medicines and fake personal protective equipment. We've seen a rise in thefts from empty shops and empty premises. We've seen some indication of a rise in public order offences in some jurisdictions. Often these have not necessarily been directly caused by lockdowns per se, but have often been caused by riots because of shortages such as food, etc. We saw some of these occurring in southern Italy, for example. And also in terms of the criminalisation of breaches of lockdown. Obviously, lockdown legislation has created a whole new branch of offending, and individuals who are persistent breachers have often found themselves fined by police. These changes to crime patterns, of course, have themselves presented some challenges for police, in as much as police are required to change their focus somewhat. Now, of course, there may be less street crime and there may be less crimes associated with the nighttime economy, but of course, a major challenge here is about how to police some of the offences that are occurring as a result of the lockdown. The impact of this, of course, is that police need to change focus. They need to establish methods of dealing with a spike in crimes such as domestic violence or internet-enabled crimes or fraud. This change of focus as a result of the lockdown in the types of crime that we may be seeing may require the police to have to explore the levels of expertise that they have within their organisation. Do they have people with sufficient skills and experience to investigate internet crimes or a spike in internet crimes over and above what might normally be expected? Or is there the expertise in domestic violence investigation? Certainly a major challenge for police is the fact that they may well need to create new ways of policing to deal with these different patterns of crime. Of course, within the experience of police officers within COVID-19 is that the criminal justice system has also changed some of its practices, and these have a direct implication upon police and policing. For example, some courts are not running as normal. Often courts have reduced the number of hearings that they have, or maybe doing hearings online in order to comply with social distancing regulations. Of course, where we reduce the number of court hearings, this has a direct implication on policing. For example, it may not be possible to take certain individuals to court where ordinarily they may be prosecuted in court. This might therefore mean that other methods of disposal might need to be used, such as police bail or perhaps a fine or perhaps some kind of delayed prosecution of individuals. Of course, the impact of this, which is important, is what is the public perception? Do the public see the police prosecuting individuals in a timely manner? And are individuals receiving the kind of sanctions that the public might feel an individual deserves Perhaps they're not seeing those happen, and potentially they begin to blame the police for this in a way the police are perceived as not doing their job. Individuals are not being taken to court, not being punished in a way that perhaps individuals in society feel they ought to be. Another challenge with respect to the criminal justice system is, of course, the role of the prisons. In many legislatures, the prisons have given individuals early release who were considered to be low-risk offenders, mainly as a result of reducing overcrowding in prisons or attempting to minimise the risk of COVID-19 infection. Of course, this leads to a challenge for the police, in as much as some individuals are released from prison who potentially may be habitual offenders who find their way back into a particular police jurisdiction. And also social distancing requirements for prisons may well make prisons reluctant to accept new offenders. And again, this has a flow down to perhaps the sentencing procedures adopted by courts. So ultimately, the challenges faced by both the court system and the prison system may well have implications for the way in which police are able to deal with offenders. And this may well have strong implications upon the attitude and relationship of the public towards the police, particularly if an attitude pertains in the public that the police are not taking certain types of offending seriously that they themselves consider to be serious offending. Police officer well-being is another major consideration and major challenge for the police in their responses to a pandemic like COVID-19. All too often, we are concerned with the responses of the public toward the police and to the effects the police have upon members of the public in what they do in policing the pandemic. But we often forget that police themselves experience significant challenges to their well-being in taking on the role of policing a pandemic. One of the major challenges that most police forces around the world have experienced with regard to COVID-19 is in policing what is a highly infectious disease to which no human has got any natural immunity. Police officers have faced challenges in the lack of personal protective equipment. Personal protective equipment, just like for medical staff, is fundamental here to at least help prevent infection of staff. Clearly, where staff become infected or there's a risk that they have been infected with COVID-19, this has had substantial implications for policing in terms of staff attrition, in terms of the need for individuals to self-quarantine. Beyond this, of course, a lack of personal protective equipment can cause challenges for officers too in terms of the levels of stress and anxiety that they face when dealing with members of the public. The health status of individuals isn't immediately clear, yet the police role requires them to talk to individuals and sometimes cases to arrest individuals, many of whom will resist arrest. There have been many, many examples of individuals threatening to cough on police or spitting at police or indeed coughing on police and claiming to be suffering from COVID-19. Now, this, of course, is likely to do very little for the anxiety levels of police officers, especially where they have been able to access correct personal protective equipment, and the worry that they may become infected and also infect members of their own family is quite significant. Of course, where officers become ill or suspect that they may have been exposed to COVID-19, they are required to self-isolate and to self-quarantine for a period, usually of 14 days, and also people that they've come into contact with. And this can have a significant effect on staff attrition, with numbers of staff unavailable for work, either due to sickness or due to self-quarantine. Internationally, we've seen police forces reporting anything from 20, even up to 50, even 60% of staff unavailable for work due to either self-quarantine or actual sickness, which of course puts significant pressure on other members of staff in a context that is highly stressful as a result of individuals worrying about their personal status and whether or not they've been exposed to COVID-19. Transportation of individuals to police stations, be they victims of crime, witnesses to crime or suspects of crime is a challenge. Should they be transported using police vehicles? And if so, do vehicles need to be disinfected? If they do, how long are those vehicles to be kept away from usage? Similarly, when an individual attends a police station, if they're suspected of being infected with COVID-19, the police station itself will doubtless need to be disinfected. And again, this presents a challenge as to should and do police, or can police stations be closed for periods of time, and for how long should they be closed in order to ensure that they are adequately cleaned. Another big challenge for the well-being of police officers is the need for officers to attend sudden deaths. Certainly there have been reports of officers attending far more sudden deaths than they would ordinarily. One report from the United Kingdom suggests an officer had attended 15 sudden deaths within 3 days, which is about as many as he would see perhaps in 3 months. Again, attending these can be hugely stressful, and the constant repetitive trauma of attending these kind of situations, particularly where individuals perhaps have lived alone and have been left for some time, can often take a significant toll on individuals. So in terms of officer well-being, the challenges really are quite clear that COVID-19 presents. Firstly, is the risk of infection with the disease itself, and attached to that are the high levels of stress and anxiety that police officers are likely to experience in their attempts to avoid infection, particularly in the context of insufficient personal protective equipment and the challenges of dealing with members of the public when it is not clear whether they have COVID-19. And finally, the high risk of traumatic stresses as a result of dealing with many more sudden deaths than would normally be experienced by officers. This all presents a significant challenge for organisations. How do police organisations set up systems that are going to best safeguard their staff? And what kind of systems can they set up to support staff into the future, where the effects of stress, anxiety and trauma may well start to show themselves as we move forward? Looking now toward the future, one challenge that really does present itself for police organisations in the immediate future is how are police to police the transition period? Many nations now have begun, as a result of falling infection rates, to start considering, and not already implementing, a change to their legislation, in a sense unlocking the lockdown. The World Health Organization recommends a gradual unlocking, often by geographical region or by different parts of the economy, dependent upon what the infection rates are in those regions and how easily parts of an economy can be opened that minimise the risk of infection. The WHO also recommends testing and contact tracing and some kind of system of quarantining of those who are found to be infected with COVID-19, as well as individuals who were their contacts. Of course, this transition, as many governments have suggested, is difficult. And of course, this presents significant challenges for police as well in terms of how they will deal with the change in rules. To begin with, following the WHO's guidance, it's highly possible that different rules could possibly apply in different parts of the country. In the United Kingdom, we've already seen in the very recent past areas such as Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland having slightly different views upon how the lockdown should be unlocked compared to England. And of course, this is a real problem for the police to enforce. How do they deal with cross-border situations? If there's a more strict lockdown in Wales compared to England, somebody may well work in England and need to travel from Wales into England, but not be allowed to do so because the Welsh legislation prevents it. How then are the police to act in terms of this in a fair and reasonable way? In terms of contact tracing and quarantining individuals, there are potential privacy concerns at play with regard to using apps and other forms of surveillance in order to identify individuals who are in need of quarantine. And of course, some individuals may not wish to be quarantined. For example, if they wish to go to work, they may be a contact of someone who's become ill who were not ill themselves, but the advice is that they must be quarantined. How then do police function in terms of enforcing that quarantine? Some individuals may well resist that. And is it a case that those people would be criminalised? And should police arrest or fine individuals for refusing to be quarantined? In this space, there are strong challenges with regard to the public perception of the fairness of the policing activity that can have a significant impact upon the trust the public has for police and ultimately their cooperation with police if they perceive that the police are acting in an unfair manner. And again, this challenge, if there are different rules in different parts of jurisdictions because of different rates of unlocking, again, how do the police manage this and how do they conduct fair and reasonable policing that's perceived to be proportionate in these different places? And ultimately, police are presenting with a significant challenge in terms of how do they police the human rights of individuals set against the need for quarantine and the need to reduce infection rates. Certainly, the legislation that's enacted by governments really does, for the transition period, need to involve police, not in terms of designing the legislation, but certainly in terms of advising government on how that legislation can be reasonably and sensibly enacted, and that fairness and reasonableness can be seen by the public in the way it's policed. Where a lack of clarity exists, as we've already seen, this can lead to wide variations in practice and ultimately can be a significant challenge for the public in their attitudes to police, and also may well undermine cooperation with police and ultimately with the legislation if the police actions are seen to be unfair and unreasonable. The final real challenge for policing is what we might call policing the new normal. It's certainly unclear, once infection rates have got down to manageable levels and when economies start to reopen and lockdowns end and various restrictions are ended, what the future will look like. COVID-19 is likely to be around for some time. It's unlikely that a vaccine will be generally available until perhaps at the earliest mid to 2021, and possibly even not until 2022 for the vast majority of people, which means that steps are going to need to be taken for individuals to protect themselves and reduce the risk of infection by COVID-19. Of course, in the future, it's unclear what that new normal of society will look like, and certainly what implications that will have for policing. It seems highly likely that there will be some form of social distancing. Highly likely, as has been discussed in many, many quarters, that face coverings might be required, that there might be bans on mass gathering, different work patterns might be set up with individuals working different shift patterns. It may be that public transport is severely limited so that large numbers of people don't gather on trains, etc. That there may be a continuation of testing and contact tracing with forced quarantines for certain individuals. It may also be the case that where infections re-emerge, that lockdowns may have to be reintroduced in certain areas, but not in all areas within a jurisdiction. There's very likely to be mass unemployment, as it looks like we're going to have a large recession as a result of the effects of COVID-19. And it may well be that there's a risk of stigmatisation from certain groups of society of other members of society, perhaps who are blamed for the infection rates, particularly by extremist groups. All of these circumstances are going to have an impact on policing. For example, where face coverings are mandated, what implications does this have for facial identification? Many police forces use facial identification systems. Face coverings make that difficult. And the changing social circumstances, as described with mass unemployment and stigmatisation of certain groups, may well lead to a rise in certain types of offending related to things like hate crime and other acquisitive offending that, again, the police will need to be aware of and may well need to alter their practice as a result. And beyond this, police officers themselves may well have to utilise face coverings and other forms of PPE in order to protect themselves from infection. And it's not clear how these requirements would impact upon day-to-day policing practice. Certainly, policing will need to change and evolve as a response to this different new normal. Finally, having considered some of the challenges for police in responding to COVID-19, what I want to do is perhaps go back to where we started this podcast. At the outset, we talked about pandemic planning and really the lack of consideration of the role of police in pandemic plans put together by most nations. And really, having considered the impact of COVID-19, I think it's probably important to say that really for any future pandemic planning, nations really do need to think about what role law enforcement, what role the police should have within that. COVID-19 has shown us quite clearly that law enforcement, the police, are not simply a separate element or a tool of public health, but are a central actor within it. In many ways, the police are public health actors. It would be, in most jurisdictions, impossible to achieve lockdowns and compliance with lockdowns from the public without some agency actually ensuring that that happened. And of course, that agency is the police. The police, therefore, become fundamental to the success of the relevant legislation and ultimately to the success of public health measures within the pandemic. So, in a very real way, it's impossible to put forward public health measures without involving the police. It's very, very likely that in the relatively near future, the world will again experience a major pandemic. And it's really incumbent upon nations to put together sensible and viable plans in order to deal with the outcomes. I would argue very strongly that it's imperative, therefore, that law enforcement and police are included in planning for future pandemics. This planning should really state quite clearly what the role of the police is. Is their role to enforce? Is their role to support? It needs to be spelled out very, very clearly. It's important to identify how the police will carry out these roles and important to clearly specify what resources the police need in order to successfully carry out these roles. Police need to be consulted upon how viable certain plans are, what are the challenges, and what are their capacity and capability to conduct the roles that they're required to have. So, in conclusion, COVID-19 has presented many, many challenges for the police. It's presented challenges due to changes in crime patterns, changes in the criminal justice system. It's presented challenges to officer well-being. There's been a lack of clarity in what the roles of police are and how they should perform them and what resources they need to perform them. And often there's been a lack of resources that have enabled the police to perform these roles. Legislation has often been unclear, and it's been unclear as to what extent police are required to enforce versus to persuade and suggest with regard to rules and regulations that have been enacted. More broadly, it's not clear how the world is going to change moving forward. There are challenges with the transition between lockdown and a lessening of lockdowns for police, and there are major challenges in how police will police the new normal post COVID-19. Ultimately, however, it is important to remember that the police really are central to any public health response to a pandemic. They can facilitate or inhibit the compliance of the public with public health guidance and legislation by the way in which they do police, and careful thought needs to be put into how they do this and what it is that they're required to do. To date, police, as we mentioned, have largely been excluded from pandemic planning, and really this must change as we move forward into a very uncertain future. Thank you very much.